Alrighty then, let's do this. Hello everybody, I'm Bill Buckmaster along with Ed Alexander. It is August 6th, 2015, our Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. We've got the monthly showdown to get things going. Usually it's early on in the month, usually a Thursday. We're going to switch over to Wednesdays in September, but the same players are going to be here because really this is the only radio show in Tucson where the far left, represented by Three Sonorans blogger, avowed leftist David Morales, and far right, represented by Tea Partier Sean McCluskey, sit down at the same table. And then I wear my referee shirt, and then I check their hands, the gloves, to make sure they have no little devices in there.
Broken
glass or something. But anyway, it is the monthly showdown. Got a couple of topics. We may only do the first one, depending on the response, or we may do topic B. But here are the two, of course, today being the 70th anniversary of the bombing at Hiroshima. And the other one, New Zealand, equipping all of their police officers with just tasers. Now, my question is, how about City of Tucson? Should they go to maybe a first line of a taser and then leave the firearm for a second line of defense? So we got a couple of questions on the table for you, and it was 790-2040 is our live line number. You can check in really on either of those topics. We may be going back and forth during the half hour. It was seven decades ago that the United States dropped an atomic bomb on the Japanese city of Hiroshima, instantly leveling the city, killing as many as 140,000 people. 3 days later, on August 9th, an American bomber dropped a nuclear device on Nagasaki, killing 40,000 to 80,000 people. So the simple fact of the atomic bomb's awesome power has certainly gone on to shape a half century of Cold War geopolitics. And of course, we're still talking about nuclear programs of emerging powers like Iran. Should Iran be entitled to get the bomb? But anyway, the topic on the table, Sean McCluskey, did we save a ton of American lives by dropping those bombs?
Not necessarily, because we responded to an attack on American soil, and it was the closest they could get. I don't think they could get to San Francisco, but that was the next thought. And so you go in with a huge over the top, you're not going to respond to my response. But am I agreeing with what the action was? Not necessarily, because of the environmental impacts. We dropped a bomb and it affected fish that we ate here in the United States for years to come. And nobody thought about that. We just thought, okay, we're going to end this. But at the end of the day, if you really just look at the 12 to 20 people who were in power, we should have never killed 48,000 others. We should have killed those 12. And the next that came into power, if they decided to do the heinous act, then we kill them too. Thousands died because of the acts of the leadership. And the leadership should have been taken out. We have snipers that can shoot a mile. Yeah. And back in the day, they couldn't shoot that far, but they could shoot far enough. So getting them on the soil would be the biggest obstacle. But do you kill the regular citizens who had nothing to do with it? And then you look at the flip side of it here, the hatred in the United States, because at that time, specific country pride was at an all-time high. It didn't matter. If you weren't a white American, you had any funny look to you, people looked at you in a slighted way for months and years to come. David, and then here we are today.
David, bad decision to drop the bomb.
Well, I mean, just think about what you said. You said, over 100,000 people killed in an instant. And this is coming from, this nation built upon Christian principles and everything. And, this also came after the immediate response to the Pearl Harbor bombing was the firebombing of Tokyo, which destroyed 95% of the city.
And a lot of other cities. But let me put something else into context, gentlemen. Okinawa was the island, really the last ground campaign of the Pacific War. And Americans lost a huge number of soldiers, and it took forever. I forget how many months it took to actually secure secure Okinawa. You had the kamikaze pilots. The thinking was that Japan would go on fighting, Sean and David, for many, maybe, yeah, to the death, and could have gone on a couple of years. We had thousands of American troops training in California and Hawaii, ready to go. So,
but they're being led, all the troops, just like American troops or foreign troops, doesn't matter what troops, all troops are led by a select few.
Right.
You have the commander-in-chief, you've got your chief of staff, you've got your generals.
Mm-hmm.
If you take out the head of the snake, the rest will follow. So if you show the leaders that are coming after us for this endless war that we are going to take you out, just like with Al-Qaeda, if we take out the top 12, top 15, they'll keep replacing it. Right. We'll keep taking you out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it should have been. It shouldn't have been this horrific loss of life.
Well, I mean, I think this was really, World War II was really the United States' attempt to rise to become a global power. It wasn't involved. And, you know, many documents have shown that we now know that the president and top leaders knew about the Pearl Harbor bombing. Because, you know, you're flying across the whole ocean with radio signals and stuff. And we allowed it to happen in order to enter the war. And, you know, we didn't really have to be in Japan. We didn't have to fight that battle. But we did because now we own, you know, we basically destroyed Japan and Germany to rebuild them to be, our, you know, now they're the top, you know, three economies. But we switched their whole economy to something that's, you know, oil-based that we were in charge of. And so now they're, you know, so I think, you know, these wars aren't necessarily, you know, if you're talking about Germany and you know, the Holocaust, and that's one thing, but you know, what we were doing in Japan was just, it's about empire building. It was about, you know, securing our dominance in this world. And that's what we've done. And that's what the next 50, 60, well, 70 years now has shown.
Let's bring in Matthew. Matthew called us at 790-2040. Matthew, what do you think about this?
I think that your two guests are sorely misinformed.
Go ahead.
And have no context. I mean, Bill, I know you have context because you know exactly what we're talking about. My uncle would have died if he had had to if we had had to send in the troops to take the Japanese home islands. We barely got around the periphery of those islands, and you saw the way the Japanese were fighting to the last soldier, to the last civilian. It wasn't just the soldiers who committed suicide or fought to the end. It was the civilians who would kill themselves rather than be taken by Americans. You have to understand the context of the Japanese mindset. The Japanese were they really believed that the emperor was their god and divine. And if they had to, they would have all died to protect him.
Okay. So Matthew, you're saying the bomb was necessary. Okay, Matthew.
Well, what I would respond to him is that his premise is wrong. He's saying that if you had to take over Japan, yes, you would have lost a lot of American life. The thing is, you didn't have to take over any of this. You didn't have to do a lot of things. But in order for America to rise to dominance, I mean, that's what we're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan today. You know, like, we don't have to be in these wars, but we are because, you know, it asserts our global dominance around the world. We have bases, and how many bases we have around the world, and like almost every country, you know.
Well, Jim Kelly wants to give us a history lesson, I believe. Jim is on the line. Hey, Jim.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Doing well. Thanks for calling.
Let's go back to 1939, April 1939, when Japan invaded mainland China and the rape of Nanking. That is what brought America into conflict with Japan, because us and many, many other nations created economic sanctions against Japan, and they couldn't get any more oil. And that's why Japan attacked the United States at Pearl Harbor on December 7th of 1941. Now let's keep going further.
But did the United States know about that?
No, wait.
Did the president know about that bombing? Did he allow it to happen?
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Look at the documentation. Right. We knew the radio signals. We knew that they were going to attack. And we left all our soldiers unarmed on a Sunday morning to be destroyed, enter the war.
All right. You're off subject, because you're talking about the Flower Code and the amount of time from when the Flower Code was broken to the time of the attack. That wasn't months and years. That was hours.
So it's so hard to put them on alert to defend themselves?
Now, wait a minute. We didn't have the internet in 1941, all right? radio traffic took a little bit of time.
Radio is the speed of light, doesn't it? Doesn't radio travel at the speed of light?
Obviously, you really need to go back to school, DA. Radio waves do not travel at the speed of light. All right. Now,
the point is
the Japanese were brutal in that war worldwide, from Burma to Japan to Korea to China.
And,
all right? There was a brutality from them to our own POWs that was beyond the pale.
Of course.
So to drop the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and end that war when at the same time, parallel, the Germans were creating B-2 rockets with steps away from nuclear capability. Dropping the bomb on Nagasaki and Hiroshima not only saved American lives, it saved countless lives all over the world in World War II.
All right.
And you need to recognize that.
Okay.
And if you don't, go back to school.
Well, just for the record, radio waves are electromagnetic waves, and they do travel the speed of light. I just Googled it, so you should check that out.
All right. A lot of people on the live line here. Obviously, folks want to talk about this. It's an important anniversary. Why don't we take the break right here, and then we'll come back. Lauren and Richard waiting patiently on the live line. Sean and David will stick around. We're talking about the 70th anniversary of the dropping of the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. Back right after this.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Pedestrian projects funded by the Regional Transportation Authority are now under construction at Treat Avenue and Broadway Boulevard and Craycroft Road in Fort Lowell Park. The crosswalk improvements provide added pedestrian safety. More than 37 high-intensity activated crosswalks have been funded by the RTA to date. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, the Friday Focus interview features State Senator Steve Farley. Our Friday roundtable will have Sarah Garrett Gaston of the Star and Linda Valdez of the Arizona Republic. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice, and we're always on my website. That's buckmastershow.com.
Welcome back. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster. It's our monthly showdown, and a lot of people want to talk about this, the 70th anniversary of the atomic bomb on the Japanese city of Hiroshima. David Morales is seated to the left of me, and Sean McCluskey to the right of me. Lauren has been waiting the longest, right there. I think we'll go to Lauren first. Hey, Lauren.
Good afternoon, Bill. Thank you. I have to condense 30 years of argument into, 30 seconds. It's impossible. I could not disagree with your liberal guests more.
Okay, go ahead.
My blood pressure is going up, and it's not my blood, but the blood represented by millions of young men coming of age in 1939 and 1940. If he wants to condemn the administration for knowing in advance about the threat the Japan posed, of course we understood the enormous threat. It was only a matter of time before we were attacked. He didn't bluff that off. Pearl Harbor represents everything that's good about America. It wasn't a defeat, it was our awakening. Japan knew, I think the I'm upset.
Nagasaki.
Commander, in his words, he said he was aware he would awaken the sleeping bear, the sleeping giant. That was us. We were isolationists. We weren't out for world dominion.
Yeah, right.
Churchill of England begged and begged for help against the Germans. If we had capitulated like Neville Chamberlain suggested, we may be speaking German or Japanese today. We did everything we possibly could in a righteous manner. We're not the evil aggressor.
Except right. even like waking up the troops on
thank
a Sunday
you.
Morning.
Thank you, Lauren.
My question is this. Again, thousands died because we did not go after the individual who was pulling the strings.
We did not. That is true. We did not bomb the Imperial Palace in Tokyo. It was off limits in the firestorm bombing, repeated bombings of Tokyo.
You bomb two islands and you get tragic death. I mean, massive thousands of deaths. You get contaminated waters, environmental catastrophe, but yet you don't kill the gentleman who started the whole thing, who ordered the attack on the American soil. That makes no sense to me.
So you're saying if the emperor had been killed and the people believing that he's a god, that he may be, that might have changed.
Chop the head off the snake, the rest of it dies.
Well, I think what's disturbing is this was really a turning point in the 20th century, and what it did is it showed off that America was now not afraid to use maybe over-aggressive power from then all the way until today, where we have, the government, where there's military, and you got to think about cops today are former military mostly, and, the aggression and
I knew you would bring in cops here at one.
It is a poor argument to say translates to the streets.
I'm saying it's the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I'm trying to make a segue to this aggression has continued to this very day, where we always justify, the military and the police when we're talking about hundreds of deaths instantly, and
there should have been 12.
Okay.
Like I said,
you want to segue?
The hat off the snake.
You want to segue? Should we go the way of New Zealand and put tasers on the front line of cops?
This is what's interesting about our justice system. You're innocent until proven guilty. But when it comes to police, it's like shoot them all and let God sort them out later. Go ahead and make my day. Like you shouldn't have. And so
Sean is sitting here. He's just shaking.
So
his head.
This is my problem. I'm not saying let's get guns away from cops. What I'm saying is cops are supposed to be professionals, and there's de-escalation techniques that they should have been trained on. That you don't need to always have a gun out at a traffic stop. All these deaths that have been taking place, and sadly, next month when we come on the radio, there's going to be even more deaths. There's an epidemic going on where cops are shooting first and asking questions later. And
let Sean respond, and then Richard, please. I know you're on hold and want to still talk about the bombings, but Sean, respond. Then we're going to go to Richard.
The taser idea is absolutely ridiculous because the escalation of violence on the street, the amount of weapons that the criminals have today, it makes no sense. 7 out of 7 TBD officers that I spoke to, all friends of mine, said they would quit the department in a heartbeat because they want to make it home safe to their family.
If
it was taser only or taser only and a weapon in the vehicle, they would leave the department. I went outside into other communities right around the surrounding area, Marana, Oral Valley, Pima County. All seven of those officers and deputies.
They're gone.
They're gone. Quit as well. So absolutely a foolish idea on that. Now, hold on. Let me finish. There is a gentleman that is a first-year officer that you give no credit to. Go to Blue Lives Matter on Facebook and take a look at the video. The officer is 1 year on the force. He stood there and he told the gentleman, I will not shoot you, will not shoot you, will not shoot you. So don't tell me and sit here and condemn every cop as being a dirty cop and being a quick draw.
When
did
I condemn
every cop? Because less than 1% of the officers that are in the United States are involved in a shooting. So don't give me this crap that all cops shoot first, because they don't. The cops that are out there, they protect us and they do a damn fine job doing it, but they do not. They do not pull quick draw. They pull their weapons and they point them at their people to get people to stand down. It is their job.
Okay. We have Richard and Ray both want to go back to the discussion on the A-bomb, and in fairness, we opened the lines for folks to talk about either the taser thing or the A-bomb. So, Richard, go ahead.
Hey, Bill. You know, the previous two callers were absolutely correct. You know, the historical perspective on this is that we would have lost 1 million or 2 million troops invading Japan.
So don't invade Japan.
The Japanese attacked us. They tortured us. They did this around the world. And by God, you cannot argue with the final result of the bombing of Japan. They surrendered.
I agree with you there, but do you not think that killing the emperor would have solved it?
My friends' fathers who fought World War II did not lose their lives going over to beat up on the Japanese.
Hey, Richard.
You know, they started the whole damn thing, and we ended it.
Richard, quick question. Sean asked it, and I'm going to ask it too. Would bombing of the emperor in the palace and killing the emperor, would that have brought Japan to its knees rather than the bombs?
I don't know, Bill. I'm not qualified to say, but I know one thing. My dad, my friends' fathers, all they well served during World War II, and I'm damn glad that they lived, and I got to know them, and they taught us valuable lessons. And I don't think the Japanese are going to be attacking anybody real soon.
Okay, I agree with you.
And you know what else? It's still a message. Now, you guys can talk about Iraq. That is a debacle. We have changed as a nation since World War II. We do have a hyper-aggressive police force. We did commit a war crime in Iraq. Let's talk about that if you want to talk about getting our country right.
Okay.
But what we did in World War II was a great thing. It had to be done, and we ended it.
Yeah, killing 100,000 civilians was a great thing.
Ray has been waiting also. Ray, I want to get him in here on the live line. Go ahead, Ray. Hey,
yes,
Ray.
Good afternoon. I've got a real quick comment and then a question.
Okay, please.
The reason they were trying to kill Hitler but not the emperor was that there was a difference in religion and culture. They thought that killing Hitler would be effective in trying to stop the war, but killing the emperor because of the religion and culture would create as many problems as it would solve. That's what I was told by my father-in-law.
Hmm.
Also, the other thing I had was that he indicated, my father-in-law did, that he had heard from people in the know that one of the reasons they had to take over the island and they wouldn't stop until there was complete surrender was that the Japanese had been working on biochemical weapons in Manchuria and China for decades, and that they were on the verge of deciding to disperse them against the Americans.
Okay, well, that's interesting stuff, Ray. And you know, but a bombing and killing the emperor. The emperor is thought of as God, and if the emperor dies, Sean, it shows he's not a god, right?
Exactly.
Or he becomes then what? Just a martyr.
And now your country goes into turmoil, and now you have self internal issues, and you don't have the fortitude to come fight anybody.
Mm.
It takes it out. I mean, like I said, kill the top of the snake. Now I did get a good email or Facebook from Rick. He said, why not have police officers carry malpractice insurance? So that way when they step out of line, the city's not on the hook.
Yeah, and David, in fairness, you're not saying all cops are bad.
I'm not saying all cops are bad. I'm just saying there's been more deaths than there need to be by cops. And as professionals, there's people dying. That
please
don't
go
need
to Blue Lives Matter and look it up on Facebook. Please watch it.
But what you're doing is you're ignoring the real deaths, like of a 12-year-old kid at a park. You want to ignore that?
No, that's one bad cop.
It's been happening. It's an epidemic. And then the cops, you know, like the Sandra Bland case, the cops then corroborated his bogus lie of a story until the video came out. The cops defend each other, and this is the problem. Is you know, it's like with the Catholic
you're
Church.
If you have bad cops, people. And you're saying that there's a cover-up over it.
But David, when you need a cop, you're going to call a cop, and you're going to get good service. vast majority of the time.
99%
hopefully,
of the time.
But you know what? This is what you always 99. Ask me. When I get pulled over, I don't know what's going to happen because I look reasonably suspicious. You know, I'm a dark, you know,
I'm white and person. Bald. I look reasonably suspicious. When I get pulled over, 10 and 12, yes, officer, how can I help you? What I do wrong? What can
Who
I do
are
for you?
You're Sean McCluskey.
Let's go through a Border Patrol checkpoint. Let's see how differently we're treated.
Even I'll go through one with you. How's that? When you want to go?
Yeah. Even with your new look, which I like, you
cleaned up a little.
Yeah, you cleaned up. You pretty much shaved all the beard off and really, really went to more of a what do they call it? Kind of a buzz cut.
Well, it's dangerous when you're dark and you have a beard. You're either Mexican or Muslim, and that's not good when you travel around the United States.
Do you fear for your safety when you are pulled over? Let's put it that way.
I've had cops pull me over and then call for backup and do searches of my car, pull the door panel apart, find nothing. And I don't know why. Like, I'm a good person. I went to school. I teach mathematics. Like, I'm not a bad person. But I'm, you know, that's the just...
You just look guilty is what you say.
Pretty much.
We're going to wrap it up. David Morales, we can look for your work at the Three Sonorans, threesonorans.com, right?
Yes.
And Sean McCluskey, we will hear you on KVOI. Coming up, Sean's going to have his own talk show in November.
Correct, November 2nd.
9 to 10. So that means we go from 3 to 4 hours of local talk. So basically a 2-hour national thing, and then I'm with you. So basically we're looking at 5 hours of 7 in the morning of talk. All right.
You've got Tucson covered.
There you go. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, 5 kids, 2 grandchildren, and cockroaches. You know what I did? Smartest call I ever made in my life. I called my friend Shelby Hawkins at 5-star Termite and Pest Control. I was introduced to a guy named Joey. He'd been my technician for 11 years. A great job. Guess what? No more cucarachas.
5-star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garber on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine. Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us. How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
Oh, as good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $99 per month. Plus, get your first month free. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 8/30/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amato is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our Thursday edition, where it is 12:34 in the afternoon here on this Thursday afternoon. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. The arts, hiking, birding, exploring the Mogollon Ghost Town, Silver City's historic downtown. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico make a great, cool weekend getaway for this weekend. It's just 3 hours east of Tucson to the Mile High City of Silver City. Great places to stay, like Silver City KOA, Spirit Canyon Lodge, and Burro Mountain Homestead RV Park. You can find out about the many things to do and the great places to stay at southwestnewmexico.org. Well, just 2 months ago, the nation marked the 40th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. The many stories in the media that were illustrating the images of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial on the Mall, which over the past three decades has become an American cultural icon symbolizing that difficult period in our history. Yet that memorial that we know today almost didn't happen. So writes Robert Dubeck, author of a new book, Creating the Vietnam Veteran Memorial, the inside story published by McFarland and Company. Mr. Dubeck served in Vietnam in 1969. He was an intelligence officer in the U.S. Air Force. He co-founded the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund in 1979 and served as its executive director and project director. He founded also the American Friends of the Czech Republic, which mobilized public support for that country's admission to NATO. Bob Dubeck, how are you today, sir?
I'm just doing fine, Bill. How are you?
Doing very well. And let's go back to the beginning on this story of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. When did the idea first surface, Bob?
Well, the idea first surfaced really in the late 70s. Probably, I think it was in 1978. The idea came to a man named Jan Scruggs, who had served in Vietnam. He grew up in the Washington area, had gone in the military to be able to get the GI Bill so he could go to college. Vietnam, he was wounded and decorated, hospitalized for 2 months, so half the men in his company killed or wounded. He came back and he got a college degree and a master's degree in psychological counseling and did a study on the readjustment of Vietnam veterans and found that many were having problems readjusting because they did not return to a supportive societal atmosphere. So as one of his recommendations in 1978 to Congress was to build a memorial as a symbol to the veterans of the country recognize their service. Of course, nothing came of this, and he and I met at a meeting of veterans in 1979. He proposed this idea. I thought it was a good one. I was a lawyer at the time. I just set up a nonprofit corporation, so that's what I advised him was needed. And 10 days later, in April of 79, we again formed the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund as the entity to undertake the contracting and to which people could make tax-deductible contributions.
Well, of course, we all know the Vietnam War was very controversial, and I reflect on a story, General John Wickham, is our monthly contributor here on the Buckmaster Show, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. He comes on the program to talk about military and foreign affairs with us, and he's told the story a couple of times here, Bob, on the air, that General Wickham was a highly decorated officer with the 101st over in Vietnam, and he came back wounded and people spitting on him. And and that wasn't all that uncommon, was it, Bob Dubeck?
I've heard that story many times. It never happened to me, but I certainly could sense a lot of antagonism when I after he came back and I'd be wearing my uniform.
So what was the initial reaction then when the idea surfaced in the spring of 1979?
Well, I'll tell you, I think the country had started to examine its conscience by that time. And I think that, you know, with the war now over for 4 years, and the fact that it became clear that many veterans were having problems. And when we came on the scene with the idea for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial as a symbol of national reconciliation, now that was key to it. We're talking about reconciliation. We were eschewing or avoiding any statement about the rightness or wrongness of the war because we felt that, if anything, the rancor over the war had deprived the veterans of their due recognition. So on Capitol Hill, it was given a good reception. There were a lot of, for example, Senator Mathias of Maryland agreed to introduce the legislation we needed. Senator John Warner of Virginia agreed to help us raise the seed money we needed to start fundraising. When we did start fundraising, we found that there was a broad segment of, you might say, middle America, people who supported the Boy Scouts, the Cancer Society, things like that, that contributed. And so we felt there that we had come, you know, that there had begun a change in the country's attitude, but still, at the same time, in the media, the wacky Vietnam veteran was still the prevalent stereotype.
We're speaking with Robert Dubeck. Mr. Dubeck is the author of a new book. It's called Creating the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, The Inside Story. If you'd like to join us with a question or comment, Bob would be happy to hear from you. Our live line number is 790-2040, 790-2040. You brought up raising funds. So who paid Robert Dubeck for the Vietnam Memorial, Vietnam Veterans Memorial?
Well, actually, there were about almost 300,000 individuals, companies, and organizations who paid for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. I believe that there were actually something like 275,000 individual donors. Some of them, I think the highest individual donation was $75,000 from Exxon Corporation. You might say, I mean, the lowest, the smallest contributions were down to $1. When we first went out with our direct mail appeal, we asked for a contribution of $20 as the cost of inscribing one of the names on the wall. That was at the time just an estimate. We didn't know at the time what it was actually going to cost for that specific item. But that's what it seemed to come. So there are a lot of contributions, I would say, in the $25 range, you know, that might have been the average or median contribution. But we did get a lot of, I mean, the American Legion. Now, I should say, I misspoke. I was thinking of corporate contributions, that was Exxon. But the American Legion contributed $1.2 million. The Veterans of Foreign Wars contributed $250,000. So you're talking about, you know, a broad fundraising campaign that reached a lot of people.
We have been struggling here in Tucson, Robert Dubeck, with what would be the appropriate memorial for the Tucson shooting, the horrible tragedy here that happened in January of 2011, where Congresswoman Giffords, of course, surviving that assassination attempt, but we lost some wonderful individuals and many people wounded, including the congresswoman. So we're in the process right now here in Tucson of deciding on what is considered be appropriate. We've had several designs come forward. What was the feeling about what would be an appropriate monument for Vietnam veterans?
It was our philosophy of those who founded this effort that the key element would that be the memorial be reflective and contemplative in character. We did not want the memorial to stir up the rancor over the war. It was not there to make a grand policy statement. It was to cause a visitor to focus on the service and sacrifice. So when you just simply describe this, of these people being subject to this senseless murder, I think there has to be simply something that causes a visitor to feel that these were valuable citizens, they were our countrymen, they were our fellow citizens, and, we all mourn their loss.
That would be
my gut sense.
You brought up something about allowing a visitor to form his or her own interpretation. So it has to be, in some ways, abstract, doesn't it? It actually, in some ways, in many regards, has to be somewhat abstract, the memorial itself.
Well, I don't know. I think it's possible to have, I myself do not have a background in art and design. I gained it only through working on the memorial. But I think it's possible to have realistic elements, too. And, for example, we have the statue of the three servicemen at the memorial. And, I think a lot of people say they look into their faces and they see the idealism, the innocence, the youth.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I mean, but of course, the more specific you get in anything, I had a psychologist I recall testified in 1983 about, what the Vietnam Memorial Wall did as opposed to building, say, a specific statue. And he almost said that almost less is more. The more you point somebody to a meaning, it shuts out a lot of other meanings or images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating to talk about. And we're going to talk some more after we take a break. We're going to talk more with Robert Dubek, and we're going to finish out the show with him because we want to really get into the whole controversy over the design of creating the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the inside story. That is Mr. Dubek's book. We continue with him right after this. Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering on its promises with more than 660 completed transportation improvements, pedestrian and bicycle safety upgrades, new sidewalks and bike lanes, as well as roadway transit and traffic signal technology improvements are helping people and goods move across our region. The RTA and its member jurisdictions are working together to offer you more options. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We're going to resume our conversation now with the author of a new book that's getting very good reviews. I've got Amazon pulled up here on the screen in front of me. The book is Creating the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, The Inside Story by Robert W. Dubeck. And the reviews have all been 5-star so far on Amazon. So people really like and are exploring what you have to say, Bob Dubeck. Congratulations to you on obviously a well-researched book. Let me ask you about the design for the memorial. There was controversy over the individual who designed it, correct?
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think the, of course, the controversy over the individual, I think, was really an offshoot of the controversy over the design itself. But the individual turned out to be, since we held a competition open to any U.S. citizen over 18 years of age, regardless of whether they were amateur or professional, we got 1,421 entries in the competition.
Wow.
So there was a broad range of things to choose from. And it turns out that there was a gut sense that maybe someone out there had been born to design this. Mm-hmm. Turns out it was a 21-year-old woman who was a student at the time. She was not yet a professional, and she submitted the winning concept. And the other irony is that she, being 21, she was really too young to remember the Vietnam War, as her personal experience, and also she was of Asian descent. Her parents were refugees from communist China, although she was born in Athens, Ohio, and grew up and as a Midwestern, mm-hmm. middle American kid. But the thing is, I think really it was the design itself, because as I said, we talked about it being reflective and contemplative in character. It could not make a statement about the war itself. And there were two other factors that influenced what it would look like. It's a memorial to all who served, but we specified that we wanted all the names of those who died and remained missing to be inscribed as a special tribute. And I think the a fourth factor was the fact that we were able, through very strong support in the Congress, to get a specific area of the mall designated. We were afraid of being shoved away across the river, so we got the Congress to do that, but in order to sort of negotiate that with the National Park Service, we said that we would design something that would be compatible with Constitution Gardens, which is that beautiful glade between the Washington Monument and Lincoln Memorial. So the design came out, whereas the Washington Monument is white, a white tower. This was black in color and receded into the ground. And rather than being a building, statue, or some other object, it was a place. It was an amphitheater. And there were certain, in spite of our theme of reconciliation and healing, there was still a lot of hurt and anger out there. And there were some veterans who felt that really what the memorial should be doing is affirming the rightness of the war and rebuking the anti-war movement. And so when it came out as it did, I think they felt they were betrayed. And in my opinion, that's what led to the roiling controversy about the design.
Would the anti-war movement... You expected, I guess, that there would be opposition from them, but did that opposition really, it didn't really come, did it?
No, it never materialized. I almost wish it had, because you know, because one of the arguments that the opponents were saying, they were saying, well, the anti-war movement is against it because they like it, because they want to use it as a place to hold demonstrations. and in fact, I was so concerned about that I worked with the National Park Service to actually institute regulations that keep demonstrations away from it. And it's a very sensitive thing from a First Amendment point of view, but that same thing applies in Arlington Cemetery. So we were able to get sort of a quarantine zone around it.
How many names are currently on the wall, Bob Dubeck, and have more names been added recently, perhaps the identification of some of the missing?
Oh, yes, definitely. Right now, I don't know the exact count, but I think the count is something like 58,300. And when we first start, I think when we opened the memorial, we were right at about 58,000 names. And what has happened, I mean, within 2 days after the memorial opened, we were already hearing from families whose loved ones had been left off. At that time, if a man was wounded, he could be in a coma, he would be discharged from the Army, he would pass away a year or two later, and the Army would have no way of tracking him. So, of course, when the memorial came open and it became a symbol of honor and recognition, people wanted to make sure that their loved one's name was there. So we set up with the Department of Defense a whole application process where people could apply. And there had to be a judgment that the wounds or the cause of death was directly, related to the service in the war. And there have been names, I think, added every year since then, for the last 30 years.
There are many healing items that are left at the wall every day, aren't there?
Yes, there are. And this began when the memorial was under construction.
Mm.
I got a phone call one day from the on-site construction manager. She said, Bob, guess what happened? Man came in uniform as we were pouring concrete on the foundation. He threw a medal in, saluted, and walked away.
Mm.
And, after the dedication, the Park Service had picked up all these items. They called me. The manager called me. He said, we've got all this stuff people have left. What should we do with it? and somehow I didn't feel about right about throwing away. I said, well, why don't you put it in the basement of the Lincoln Memorial for a while? And sure enough, this began the starting the whole Smithsonian collection, which has about 800,000 items by now. So it seems to be a part of a ritual. There's been books written about it, that in certain parts of our culture, there's this idea of leaving something to communicate with your lost loved one.
Well, I know you've got friends' names on that wall, and it must be still very emotional for you, Bob Dubeck.
Well, yes, Bill, but to some degree, because I was in charge and know the details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I almost see it in much more objective sense than most people do.
Mm-hmm.
So I am, how could I say, I saw it from the beginning. It's a little bit like, you know, you've heard the, well, I won't try to make a joke here.
You have to wrap it up here real quickly. Yeah. Okay. Robert Dubeck, thank you very much. Creating the Vietnam Veterans Memorial is Mr. Dubeck's book, and you can go to Amazon. Congratulations, Bob.
On thank you very much.
Well-written book. Thanks for being with us.
All right.
Bob Dubeck with us on The Buckmaster Show. For Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw comes up from 4 to 5 this afternoon, and then tomorrow morning, 3 hours of local talk. 6 to 8, Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe, then the Daily Double with Chris DeSimone and me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you at 12:04. Have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.